This is Back to Back.
Yo, what's up, Back to Backers? This is Willie Joy. Welcome to the show. This is Back to Back. This is my podcast. We're back. 2024, baby. Happy New Year. How's everybody doing? Did you have a good New Year's Eve? New Year's Eve, always, you know, one of the most anticlimactic holidays. Can never live up to expectations. And yet, we do it every year. And now we're in the future. The potential of the year. Anything could happen. And you know what? That's a fun time to be in. So look, the podcast is coming back with new episodes starting next week. This week, we're looking back at the biggest episode we had from 2023. By the numbers, by your listenership, it's Dylan Francis. Dylan Francis running back the classic episode from March 2023. I love him so much, man. This was, for me too, one of my favorites of last year. You know, he was busy in December. He was doing all kinds of crazy runs of shows. And if you didn't catch this episode the first time around, I highly recommend checking it out now. You'll hear us talk about him refinding that creative spark. And for him, I'm sure this year, the new year, you're going to see the fruits of those labors that you're going to hear us talking about right now. Please enjoy the number one episode from last year. This is me and Dylan Francis back to back. Let's go.
Whatever, like if it's some shitty computer audio, you can run it through an AI fixes everything for you now.
Oh, yeah. That's great. I mean, isn't that the way our entire lives are going? It's just,
I guess so.
Just like fill in the blank and AI fixes that for you now.
I hope it becomes that. And then we all get to just relax and focus on art, but that's not going to happen.
No, definitely not.
No.
I mean, I was just talking to my mom about this where, you know, my mom's always been like a bit of like a sci-fi nerd, and she likes the idea of, you know, what's going to happen in the future and AI and all this kind of stuff. And she was like, it's so cool. You know, she's sending me pictures of like generated images, and she's like, you can collaborate with an AI, you know, that kind of thing. And then I was like, Mom, but you know, we're just going to fuck it up. There's no way.
Always.
Yeah.
We're always going to fuck it up.
Yeah, man.
It's going to be I don't know. It's going to be interesting.
It is. I mean, it's happening so fast now where the evolutions of it, like I know a guy who's making a generative AI for samples, for like sample generation. So it'll like make you a break that's never been made before that somebody could sample.
That's fucking crazy.
Yeah.
You know,
isn't that nuts?
That's mind blowing. Like this stuff is going to be so cool, but I also wonder what is going to, you know, like, is everything just going to be replaced to just, you're basically just putting building block, you know, it's like with samples, it's kind of like somewhat like that, you know. Yeah. I think there is the artistic part of it of like, you know, when you're sampling a record or you're taking samples from Splice, there's like, all right, we got to put this in key. Is this going to sound right? Do we have to Melodyne it? But yeah. Like now these building blocks are going to be so like specific. Where it's like, make me a cool lead that sounds like X song. And then you have a brand new lead that sounds like that song that you wanted to do something like. But it's cool, but it's also scary because you're like, holy shit, you know?
Well, it's like, yeah, it's like, how much does knowledge matter at the end of the day? Because I remember, again, like I remember when GPS started becoming like a big thing. And all of a sudden, mm-hmm. you didn't really need to know how to get around anymore because you could just put in the address and you just go there and it's fine. But then, you know, it's like there's always that like, well, what if there's an apocalypse and all the cell networks go down and all of a sudden you can't get anywhere because you never learned how to fucking go anywhere in your city?
Yeah.
And I mean, I say that only to be like, does any of it matter? Like, does it matter if we know how to make a bass sound, you know, now that something can just make it for us? And if eventually on a long enough timeline, it'll get good enough that it won't sound so generic. And you can kind of just be like, yeah, make it sound like this. It'll sound exactly like that, you know?
No, exactly. It's an interesting, like, cause I've even wanted to like pick up playing piano.
Mm.
And cause I'm not like, I wish I was way better at piano. That was one thing that I always wished when I started making music.
Me too,
cause like,
yeah.
I just use, you know, I'm like, I think, is it Deadmau5? Or I remember when Deadmau5 and Wolfgang Gardner were working together. One of them is like a savant at keys. And the other one is a savant of like, I put MIDI correctly in the spots where I need it to go.
Yeah, yeah.
And I'm way below there where I'm like, I put MIDI and sometimes it's right. And then I'll have to fix it later once I do the car test. So, I don't even know what I was thinking right there.
You were talking about wanting to learn piano and like, doesn't matter.
So yes. Sorry. I went off on, okay. The tangent's correct. So then the thing is, will knowing piano even matter later on?
Right.
It's not going to. You're going to be able to get, like, you can already go to ChatGPT and be like, hey, ChatGPT, spit me out the coolest chords you've ever heard in your entire life. That's like X song meets X song meets X song. Yeah. It's like, okay, cool. Here it is. Okay. So give me the notes split. And then you have your chord progression and you don't need to know piano because of AI.
Yeah. Yeah.
So it's do you want to go backwards? But then you're right. Like in the, like, okay, I was watching Last of Us last night.
Oh, sure. Is it good?
Dude, I haven't watched it yet. Apocalypse happened. You got to know something so you can make money or else you're going to be cleaning the sewers of shit. So you can get those little green papers.
I haven't seen it yet. Was it good?
Oh, dude. Phenomenal. Yeah. I was like, I wish that they had put out I would have watched the whole thing last night. It's so good.
That's what I do now with shows is I wait till they finish and then I just binge them all. It's like,
that's probably a better idea.
I don't know if it is because it's just now I feel like my brain has just gotten shittier because now I'm like, I don't want to wait a week. I have to wait a week. Like, I just get so mad. It's so stupid. There's no reason. Like, I think that's I don't know why I'm going down this rabbit hole to start up, but I sort of feel like that's the way the culture is going too, right? Is it's all immediacy. It's all, I need right now. I won't wait for anything. If I have to wait, it's not worth it. That kind of thing. And to music too, to a certain extent, I feel that way where, I don't know. I think as creators, I'm sure you run into this all the time. Like, here's a good example, right? So you put out the DJ Hansel album, right? Dropped a whole album.
That's right. I won that case, baby. Yeah.
the whole album, it's out, right? I guarantee you, if it hasn't happened already, someone is going to be like, hey, when's the next DJ Hansel album coming out? You know?
for sure.
Yeah.
For sure. Yeah. They'll listen to it that fast. And then, I mean, also the other thing that happens as well that I think is such a bummer with like playlisting and all that. This is a dark rabbit hole to get down.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, let's go.
So many, like, I mean, this happens on like, I don't know if I'm one of those artists that's like stuck in albums. Cause when I did Happy Machine, I was like, this is really fun. This is awesome. But there's so much stuff that doesn't get listened to unless you're like a super duper duper fan.
Yeah.
So many things get, you know, where someone's like, hey, we're, you know, where are these, you know, I like all the songs that are this and it's just the singles, you know, it's not any of the other songs that are on the album. But I guess that happens. I guess I'm just complaining about something in a new form because I bet you that happened from radio, you know?
Yeah.
There's people that listen to radio and then we're like, all right, I only like this one song. I'm not even going to go and get the album. And then, so never mind. My point's mute. Fuck my point.
I mean, yeah, I don't know, man. We got to bitch about something.
Yeah.
even with radio, that must have been annoying too, because that's probably when that paradigm started of like, we need the single to sell the rest of the album, right? Because before then it was like, we need a hit song so people will come buy tickets, right? Which to some extent it is still now, but I feel like the radio, it must have been so weird for artists right when radio started to try to adapt to that format of being like, well, wait, I have to like pick the one song and that's all people are going to hear. And I got to ask people to play it on their station. Also, what's a radio?
Yeah. When did the first... Hold on.
Yeah, I was just wondering.
By the way, Willie, I haven't seen you in...
Dude, it's been so long.
It's got to be...
It's years.
Like
it's,
10 years.
You know what? It hasn't been 10. There was one time I thought of it a minute ago. We saw each other at a Mad Decent block party in Florida, like probably like 5, 6, 7 years ago. And I just remember we were both backstage, Fort Lauderdale maybe. And I just remember we sat and hung out for like 45 minutes and it was nice. That's the whole memory.
Oh, that's, I'm trying to remember which one it was. Like, who else was?
It was Fort Lauderdale. Wes was there. I think Brills was there.
Were they doing Major Lazer?
Maybe it was Major Lazer. I think
Brills, dude.
Brills was there back before he was LS Dream.
Yeah.
Very early Boombox Cartel. Americo was there. I don't know who else was there. I just remember it was hot as fuck. It was like 105 degrees. Everyone was gross.
Yeah, that sounds right.
Yeah.
That sounds right.
Yeah.
Okay, hold on. When did the first radio station come about? But anyway, dude, great to see you again.
It's so good to see you.
You look fantastic.
No, you do too, man. I like it. Yeah, you got a little gray in the beard. I got a little gray in the beard. I feel like we're coming along. We're growing.
No shame
up
here. No, nah. I want, I'm not trying to make myself look like I'm not graying. I got a little bit in here coming on.
It's good.
I'm gonna turn into a, what is it? What do they call it?
Silver gray, fox. Silver fox.
Gray stallion or something like that.
Yeah, sure. It's silver fox. Silver fox, baby.
Silver fox. That's what it is. Not a stallion. Sorry.
Yeah. I like gray stallion though. That's good.
Gray. It doesn't even rhyme. Yeah. World's first commercial radio station, KDKA, began broadcasting in Pittsburgh in 1920.
Damn. Pittsburgh. All right.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. I guess Pittsburgh has always been an industrious city.
What was the music in the 1920s?
Honky tonk? No, it's like flappers in the 20s, right? Like swing music.
Music in the 1920s was jazz, blues, swing dance band, and ragtime.
Yeah.
Okay. I was thinking honky tonk, ragtime, same.
You're not far off. But yeah, it was music, man. It was like you get dressed up with you put on the suit with the fancy hat, you had to be a good dancer too. Like swing dancing's hard.
Oh yeah. I went to Cotillion, had to learn that.
Wait, really?
Yeah. My parents put it, my brother and I in Cotillion and we would use your fork and knife correctly.
Before we even get there, just because I only have a vague grasp of what Cotillion is. What is Cotillion?
So Cotillion is the proper way to use your fork and knife, how to properly seat a woman at your table it's like a manners school. Yeah. And then they teach you how to dance correctly. I guess my parents were just trying to keep my brother and I out of trouble. That's really what it is.
Did any of it stick? Do you use any of it?
Yeah. I mean, when I eat, I think I eat correctly. Sometimes I'll see people like using their fork like this.
Yeah.
That one always blows my mind. Cause also it's like, it looks so crazy to like try to cut like that.
Yeah. It's so hard to do. You're giving yourself so much extra work. but
that, getting the seat out for any woman, they would make us bring the punch and cookies to her first. And then you go get yours.
Wow. So
it's like all that,
Wow.
Just being a good person.
Yeah. Well, that's worth something. I mean, if you're going to teach kids, I don't know, we teach kids all kinds of useless shit. That seems like fairly useful shit you can take with you.
It was good. Like it's good for where they're like, I think the one that's the most used that I have is where you put your fork and knife together when you're done eating. And that tells any server or waiter, whoever is cooking and, whoever cooked the meal at home, like you're done eating and that's it.
That's smart. Now that you say that, I'm like, of course I've seen a million people do that, but I don't think I ever realized that's what that was.
Yeah.
Dude, can I tell you, this is unrelated, but I the funniest thing before we got on this call, it just made my whole week, is I got this note like half an hour ago I think someone on your team sent something on to someone on my team. And it was just this like one line thing of being like, hey, just so Willie knows, he's going to be talking to Dylan. He's not going to be talking to DJ Hansel.
Yeah. And a lot of people think that we're the same person and we're not. Like, you know, I brought these glasses just to like, I don't even look like him. Yeah. I don't. It's crazy. I don't know why people think that. I know we have the craziest rivalry, but yeah, I'm not him.
It just really made my day because I was like, first of all, it's just a hilarious thing that you have to tell somebody. And then second of all, I was imagining my reaction of being like, well, what the fuck? I have to talk to Dylan, the person? I don't want to talk to that asshole. I want to talk. It's like just the point your life is at, man, where these are important business notifications.
Yeah.
It just really made my day.
I've come a long way.
Yeah. I mean, okay, so the Hansel thing, and we don't have to break the fourth wall any more than you don't want to, but but it's funny to me that like Hansel is this character that's been around in your career, circling your career for a long time. But and there's this album out now, which is a great album. Everybody should go listen to the album, Anti-Everything. But is it weird to like have this sort of side character in your life that I feel like is more relevant than ever right now? Like, I feel like when Hansel started, it was kind of, you know, it was this funny parody of like kind of just some tendencies, some people, some sounds we would see in the scene. But it was like a lighthearted parody. And now I feel like it's less of a parody, if you know what I mean. Like, I feel like Hansel kind of fits well in 2023.
Yeah. Again, I am not him.
Sure. Sure. So just your opinion on this strange fellow.
But I'll humor. it is really funny that like, if you would have asked me, if 2023 was going to be the year of techno and house music, I don't think I would have said you were correct.
Yeah.
I think it's incredible that it is. And I was actually talking to Kill the Noise about it. Cause I was trying to figure out like what happened and how that was able to come about. Like what switched, because it's, you know, it's such a, like, you could never play this in Vegas.
Yeah.
That's like a good barometer of like when something is extremely popular. It's like if you're allowed to finally play it in Vegas. Like, funny enough, Mumatone never got popular enough for me to be able to like play more than just my songs of it in Vegas. Like it would clear the dance floor for sure.
Yeah. Yeah, I could see it, man.
Yeah. So it's so interesting. And Jake and I, when we were talking about it, he was like, you know, the thing that I think really happened was during COVID, when a lot of people were just DJing on Twitch and that's what you were playing, like, what are you going to play? You're not going to play Tear Out Dubstep.
Yeah.
Maybe you are. And I love it, but I don't know if I would necessarily be the person to tune in for that. When Wes and I were DJing during COVID and we were doing like the Corona Night Fever stuff, we were just playing all house records that were like, you know, deeper. Like, we weren't playing any Dembo stuff that was crazy. We weren't playing any records that were that crazy, just because it felt a little bizarre to do that.
Yeah.
So that's, and Jake was like, I feel like that's really where it started. And also Fisher Losing It, I feel like that song went fucking insane, you know? Yeah. And that also, I think, helped a lot. So, it's funny that you know, this character that it's not me.
Yeah, just some guy.
Just some guy that, you know, was back then just a like little tiny joke of like, you know, he was made to make fun of those type of producers, actually, you know? Like he was poke, like even one of my songs, Not Butter, like the whole joke in that song was to make fun of techno music that was like, we are like combination doing like, you know, and it was meant to like, I still can't believe it's Not Butter. That was the whole point of that. So I feel like Hansel was like, you know, if I created him, was that yeah. version of that, like even more so.
Yeah.
And that's why I just wanted to keep making fun of that stuff, because it takes itself so seriously. And at the end of the day, I really feel like nobody should be taking themselves that seriously, because it's just, you know, digital music on your computer in Ableton.
I mean, don't you sometimes like look at what I'm sure you will understand this, but I talk about this all the time on the podcast. It's like, so every once in a while I'll play a show or I'll finish a song and you just have that little out of body moment that is like, this is so weird. What a ridiculous thing that I do in my life. I could not think of a sillier thing for somebody to do for a job.
Well, yeah, like it's wild that like I feel like right before DJ AM passed, rest in peace, one of the most incredible, yeah. like he was the one that was like pushing electronic music so far 100%. In LA. But I feel like he was this turning point with Daft Punk and Steve Aoki and you know, Bloody Beetroots, Crookers. Like I feel like they were this like weird turn in America that then somehow put the DJ from being the person that plays music and creates the vibe so people can dance to people looking at you and jumping up and down and you know,
yeah,
you
the being rock star.
The main attraction of the show.
Yeah.
There's certain times where I'm like, holy fuck, this is my job. It's really cool, but it's like, it's, I'm being the complete focus of the night, which is like, usually that would be like a rock band or, you know,
yeah.
a singer. And well,
can we talk about when you were first starting off? Because you were kind of just a local DJ for a while, right? Before any of this happened.
Yeah, I was playing at the Room on Cahuenga. I don't even think it's called that anymore. Maybe it is. But I think I played there for like almost a year for no money. I would just go there every Friday. I just loved DJing at that time. And I think it helped a lot of like with my production of just knowing how to create the actual flow of a song.
Yeah. And what people respond to.
Exactly. Oh man. There were so many times where I wanted to play like EDM dance music or, you know, like Ill to Destroy by Bloody Beetroots. And
yeah,
that was not the place. And I remember the bouncer came up to me and he's like, yo, I love what you play because I listen to Slayer, I listen to Metallica, I listen to all of them, and that reminds me of that. And of course, you know, Ill to Destroy is like a remix of Metallica. But he's like, yo, if you really want to get people in here and dance, like, go study a bunch of 90s hip hop. So I remember I asked my friend Eric Hamilton, he was like, yo, watch this documentary on VH1. It has like all these 90s hip hop songs. It's also just a good doc, and you can play all these songs and they'll go off. And so I watched the doc and it was incredible. And then I downloaded all these songs and like made a set list. Dude, my Fridays were popping off.
Yep.
Like
yep,
people
yep.
were coming in and be like, yo, do you always play this on this Friday? I remember this couple came in and was like asking like, yo, we're going to come back for sure. And then at the end of the night, that's when the bouncer was like, that's when you should like at the end of the night, then play your stuff that you want to play. Just don't fuck up the dance floor.
Yeah.
So I played there for a year. And then I remember going to the owner and being like, yo, I played here for a year. I finally learned like how to bring in people on Friday nights. Can I stop getting paid in drink tickets? I also couldn't drink because I had a DUI and I, you know, I'm not going to drive my car back drunk again. And he was like, yo, like, let's just see how it goes a little bit longer. And he was basically just trying to see how long he could get me to go for free. And so I think I stopped playing there and then I made mixtapes and like passed them out to all these clubs. It was like, I had a CD and I was like, you know, I think I still didn't have a name yet. I just was like Dylan Francis mix CD here. Right. It was like Breakbot, like a bunch of stuff that where it was like, book me as an opener. I can do this and I can set it up for whoever's going to play. And I'm not going to fuck up, you know, I'm not going to play, you know, top records in the beginning.
Yeah. Yeah.
So it was that. And then the way that I got into production was through DJing. Cinespace was massive and, you know, it was like them jeans, Steve Aoki playing there like every other week. But just all the people that were coming in, they were all friends and it was so cool. And it was like such a awesome group of people in Dimmock. So I was like, fuck, I really want to play there. But I knew I couldn't play there unless I started making music. So that's when I went and worked with my friend Corey Enemy in Atlanta for like 4 months. And after he was like doing pop sessions, but then after every session, he'd be like, yo, what do you want to learn? Like, just show me any song and I'll teach you how to do the synthesis on it and whatever.
That's amazing. So we would
sit there and, huh?
That's amazing. That's just crazy that he would do that.
Oh yeah. No, he was incredible. Love Corey. I haven't spoken to him in a long time. I'm going to try to figure out how to reconnect with him, but the stuff that he did for me in the beginning was like monumental in terms of, I moved to Atlanta. I lived on his kitchen floor and basically was like his intern/assistant. Like, I was updating his MySpace and, nice. You know, doing random stuff like that. But it was so cool. Like, after every session, we would stay until like the wee hours at DARP. And he would just be like, all right, what do you want to learn? It was on the synth Vanguard and Albino.
Oh yeah.
And yeah, you remember those. They just 100%. Re-released Vanguard as well.
Did they?
Yeah, they did. Re-Effect did.
Damn.
I'm going to try it out. I'm going to see what's happening in it. But yeah, I remember I was just like, how do you make this? How do you make that? And then we started making music together and then I moved back to my parents' place, like four months later. And that was where like I just sat in the back room and I did like, I remember this interview from A-Track and it was like, I put in 10,000 hours on my DJing so I could master it. So I was like, so that stuck in my head where I was like, all right, I need to put 10,000 hours on making music and then I'll make enough shit music that it'll finally get good. And that was it. I did that with production and then it like kind of came to fruition after a year of just like sitting in the back house. And that's like where I got my first break, where Diplo heard my song Massa Blasta. And that was like the kind of the first domino falling for the next one and the next one.
Yeah, of course, Matt. Well, and I remember you went on like a crazy run at the start there that I think it was before you had like a big fan base, but before a lot of people knew who you were. But in the DJ community, the nerd community, there was a point where everyone in that little niche was talking about this new kid and all the tunes you were making. Cause you know, you were doing these crazy remixes for people. Like, I was going back and listening. I still have a bunch of the old ones of like Toddla T and, like the Heavy Feet remix. I always loved the Dude, heavy. Yeah.
Even for you, I was thinking about the, that one as well.
Dude. Yeah. You remixed the first song that I ever put out on a label. Which was insane. And to bring it back and connect it with this 10,000 hours thing, what I remember about that was I sent the stems out and you sent me back the finished remix like 4 hours later. like completely finished. It was the craziest thing I'd ever seen. I was like, this is impossible. And it was good. And it's still like, it still goes up. You could still play it. You know, it was one of those things where I was like, this kid's faster than anybody.
I mean, I that's all I was doing. I remember at that time, I just loved doing remixes because it was like, you're getting like a half finished thing. So you don't have to start from scratch. That's why I loved it, because like the chord progressions were already there and I could just make top melodies if I wanted to. And then I just felt, I don't know. I always like, I think cause of growing up in like the Hype Machine era, I always loved remixes more than the original songs for some reason. Like I remember there's like always a RAC remix of something, or like the 12s remix or an indie song that I loved. Knox. So I think that was like a big thing for me as well, where I was like, dude, I want to remix as much stuff as possible, cause I could also get on Hype Machine from it.
It was wild, man. I mean, did it feel like to you, like looking back, it felt like it was like this rocket ship at a certain point. Like you were dropping so much music. Every tune was this really fresh feel to it, this kind of unique thing built off of Moombahtone, you know, which was an already established thing. But the way you were doing it, there was something different about it. There was some unique flavor to it. And it really felt like just all of a sudden, like, this is the guy. You know, like for that time, like you were, you know, there's always a guy or a girl where for some chunk of time, they're the one. And I think it's safe to say you were that one for whatever that rocket ship period was. Like, Did it feel like that to you? Were you aware of any of that at the time?
No, not really. To me, I felt like Munchi was I was like so constantly inspired by everything that he was doing.
Yeah.
His like drum production, the Moomba Soul stuff that he was doing, I thought was really cool. But I felt like I always wanted to get to a spot where I was like somewhat like him or something like that. So it was like healthy competition. I don't think I ever was like, you know, maliciously competing with him or vice versa.
Yeah,
it was always just like, you know, he did something. So I was like, all right, cool. I got to go do something cool too. So there was always that. And I think everything was moving so quickly. I just never really like, I never really had time to sit and be like, wow, this is, you know, this is really cool. I think there was one time I was playing Hard Summer and my parents were there. And like at the end of the set, I kind of like cried a little bit. I was also really drunk, so I don't really remember.
Yeah.
But you know, it was like a flurry of emotions where I was like, holy shit, like this is crazy. Cause I remember I opened that festival, like in 2013, maybe it was 2012. And I did so well that they put me on like a good booking the next year. And I feel like that was when it all kind of hit me. Yeah. But yeah, it was just going so fast that I was just like, I was just having fun in the moment and I didn't really think anything of it. I was just like, just wanted to keep making cool, fun work.
Yeah. Is that still you? Like, do you still have the same motivations that you did back then? Cause I, you know, the excitement of everything wears off over time, but you know, then you kind of have to like find the new excitement or find the different way to look at something to make it fun.
I'm exactly in that spot of trying to find that actually. And, I recently started going back to Icon Collective. It's like, funny enough, Icon Collective, I was supposed to go there when I was starting out in music. And I went there for, I think, like almost a week. And I think you have a week to be able to like cancel.
Oh, yeah.
And I think I was like right at the cutoff. So I remember talking to my dad. I'm like, Dad, I don't think I want to go here. I think I can do this myself. Like, I don't know. And so he had to call and be like, hey, he's not going to go there. They had an argument, but then we finally figured it out. But then, so I called Chris again. And I was like, yo, dude, like, Ableton used to be like a video game to me. Like I would open it up and I would be so like, I would just fucking didn't even care what I was throwing on there. I'd be like, what does this do? What does this do? Who cares? If it sounds cool, I'll do it. I'll use it. And from touring so much, I feel like I got so far away from that. Like, you know, it takes me so much longer to finish music now. Like the last song that I worked on with Elenium, I think it took me like a year and a half. Like the song was almost done within like a couple months, but then to finally like finish it was so much longer.
Of course.
And it was all, I think also because, I started caring too much. Cause you know, when you start like, I don't know, I feel like I put a block in my own, on my own self. And I've seen this with a lot of other producers, where they'll play me something. I'll be like, dude, don't, this is fucking insane. Like you should put this on. Like, yeah. No, it's not done yet. And there's like this really good quote from Andy Warhol, which is like, hold on. I have it on my phone.
Okay,
It's such a good thing to like go back to. Do you know the quote?
I know that it exists, but I don't remember what it is. I know what you're talking about though.
I got to find. Okay. Don't think about making art. Just get it done. Let everyone else decide if it's good or bad, whether they love it or hate it. While they are deciding, make even more art.
Yeah.
Which is like such a good thing to like have to keep putting in your mind of who cares if it's perfect, if it, you know,
yeah.
Like, and you can be that artist that wants to do that, but it may affect your work flow and how much you're creating and how much fun you're having.
That's the real thing, right? It's like, cause I feel like when we were younger and we were coming up and all that, then everything's fun. Cause you're doing everything for the first time and any little accomplishment means the world and just everything is so cool. So it doesn't really matter. But then once you kind of get established, become a, you know, a veteran or a working DJ or whatever you want to call it, then yeah, it's you're less easily impressed. And so, you know, you kind of, for, at least for me, I'll speak for myself, like it's very easy to forget what was so cool about this at the start. And that's, I talk about this on the podcast all the time. I feel like everyone who sticks around in this game long enough, you end up trying to just make yourself stupider again. I completely agree with you. Yeah. You know too much. It was like everything's more pure when you're a kid and you don't know anything and you have, you know, you don't know that you're doing something the wrong way, any of that. I wonder if there's a way to like, because that really is the holy grail of like, you know, the shortest distance between you and sort of just pure creative impulse, right? But yeah. I wonder if there's a way to learn that the first time around and not be sitting on a podcast talking about how we can do it.
You know? No, because if you like the unless you're not learning the whole time you're going,
yeah,
then you'll be able to keep that. But the fact is like, it's just impossible because you can't be green forever towards music production or touring or, yeah, you know, playing the same venue over and over. Like, it's just all like, that's just, it sucks. Cause back then I didn't think it was ever going to get stale for me, you know? And that's just inevitable for everyone. So I think it's just like, you always just got to figure out a way to, I guess, reinvent the wheel, you know, is the saying. And that's where I started going back to Icon. I'm doing like tutoring sessions there. Oh, where I'm doing so cool. Like mixing and mastering stuff, sound design, and then Ableton workflow stuff to make it so, because I was like, I want to feel like I'm back in a video game. And it's starting to happen just from doing that. I also feel like in dance music, like the way that I talked to Icon about this, because my dad is an alternative medicine doctor, and every year he'll go to a couple seminars that are like, hey man, we just did a science experiment on sucralose. Like, this is a recent one where sucralose is bad for your gut biome and actually can cause you to gain weight. And so my dad was like, hey Dylan, by the way, I just found this out. They did a study and sucralose is actually bad for your gut biome. So make sure, you know, if you have anything with it in it, just do less of it. Blah, 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 blah.
Yeah.
So I was like, man, it's so cool that my dad is like continuing to learn always. And then I also know that there's this guy, Manny, I always say his name wrong. Manny Mariquin, I believe. He's a mixing, mastering engineer. And he's incredible. He's done up like Katy Perry stuff, all these right. records. He did Say Less for Me.
Okay.
And I went in when he was doing Say Less for Me and we were talking, he's like, yo man, I do these mixing, mastering, not conventions, but basically he's like, I get some of the best world, you know, mixers. And we go to some place and we hang out for 2 weeks and we just talk about like what we're using and what's proven to be really good and what's proven to be really bad and what you should stop using or any new techniques. And I always tried to go to one, but then COVID happened.
Right.
And then, I don't know if he's doing it anymore, but that's where I called Chris and I was like, dude, there's no continued learning in dance music. And also everyone in dance music is always like so protective of what they know and trying to make sure that nobody else knows it.
Yeah.
And, so I hit up Chris and I was like, dude, I just feel like I need to do that. And he's like, oh yeah. Like there's been a bunch of people that have come in and done like continued learning where you just, you know, we have a couple tutors that we can give you that, and you just have to know specifically what you want to do or pick and choose from the course. And so it's been so, so gratifying to like go in and like, even with the mixing and mastering stuff, like I've done everything by ear. Right. And it's cool to like see the actual, you know, science behind it or math behind it.
Yeah.
Well, dude, I'm like, okay, cool.
You're going back to school about it too. Like that.
Yeah.
I like that. Cause that is a way to sort of get back to why or how you started in the first place, which was that 10,000 hours thing of just sitting in front of a computer, making stuff all the time, not always knowing what you were doing. And the fact that you're able to sort of figure out how to put yourself back in that place, I think is great. I think it's also great that we're talking about, you know, still going back to school, still learning shit at the level that you're at. Cause I think there's sort of a myth that like once somebody gets to a certain level, they're just fully formed, you know, that's like they're set in stone. They're a god. They know something that you don't and you'll never know it. And they're different somehow. like all these myths, man. It's funny.
And I think that I had that myth in my head where I was like, well, you know, I'm at this level. Why should I be gone? And I was like, no, wait, what? Like,
yeah,
my dad is doing that. And why would that be any different from making music? Like that actually,
dude,
you know, more so because
yeah,
so much different shit happens in music. Like,
I said this to somebody the other day, like my mom's a doctor as well. And doctors, you know, they have to, I think it's every 5 years or something, they have to recertify. They have to take tests keep their license to continue practicing medicine. I kind of feel like, you know, somebody should start certifying DJ. Like,
you know, oh my God.
Like, do you still know how to do this? Like, yeah.
All right. You need to make this synthesizer and you have to do it with subtractive synthesis. Go. You have 5 minutes. Speed run.
Oh, man. I mean, I'm half joking, but I'm half serious.
No, but it's been so, I also think that like imposter syndrome happens a lot as you keep, you know, going. Like I felt like that for me has happened a lot, and it's like you start thinking that things are way harder than they are, and putting these mental blocks for yourself.
So wait, are you saying that just so I understand, the imposter syndrome for you happened more after success?
Yeah.
That's interesting.
Yeah. Like where I was like, I feel like I can't get in the studio with people. Cause I just like, I have this like mental block now because I haven't been working in Ableton every single, like when I was working in Ableton every single day, I had exactly my go-to stuff that I was doing where it was this.
I think I lost you again. Unstable internet. Oh wait, now I just got your internet connection is unstable. What's going on with
that? Oh, it was you this time.
Fucking
one for one.
And what's so stupid about this is that I'm sure we both have great internet, you know?
Yeah, I know.
Yeah.
No, actually I don't because it's Spectrum and Spectrum sucks.
Okay. Well, let's get that out there. If we get one thing out there.
Yes. We need Spectrum to know that they suck and they need to stop rubbing their nipples and give us good internet. Okay.
is that what they do? They're just out in LA rubbing their nipples?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, oh yeah, the internet stopped. You ever seen that? You've seen that South Park, right? They're fucking rubbing their nipples.
Yeah.
Like, yeah. Tell us about your problem. How's the internet? It's bad. Oh yeah.
All right. That's Spectrum.
but where did it get cut off this time?
You were talking about.
I was saying that Splice fucked up my way of like producing because it gives you so many. It gives you so many options for samples where it almost is actually harder to make a decision on what you want to use. Where back then it was like, you know, you're downloading Vengeance samples or you're finding samples off of, fuck, what was the website that I even used to use? I forgot what it's called. It's like,
I used to be on were you ever on the torrent sites?
Oh yeah. Yeah. I was trying to think of whatever there was this one torrent site that I was on that was like so good for music production. Dude,
there's some of them are still active. I feel like I don't even want to dox them.
No, but, don't dox them.
Yeah.
I think we both know about which one it is. Yeah, and I'm still on there.
Me too.
but yeah, I felt like that messed up my workflow a little bit. And
too many choices.
Too many choices. And then I'll never like save stuff as templates or save, you know, synths, which now I've started trying to do more. And I need to just like go back on stuff and you know, find kicks that I should be using, you know. Yeah. I know that there's producers that are like, yeah, I got my like 20 kicks that I use for whatever house song I'm making, and I'm like, oh, I just use a new kick every time.
Yeah, dude, I do too. And I always wondered about that. I was jealous of like that, the speed and efficiency of that. But then I also wonder, you know, does that, maybe it's good, maybe we need to limit ourselves somehow. It probably doesn't matter. It's probably smart. I'm not even going to say that maybe it's a bad idea. It's probably smart.
I think it's a good idea to limit yourself.
Yeah. Yeah, I think it is. You got to have a sandbox, you know, set some parameters.
Exactly. Exactly. I mean, like that's the time where I can actually really make music well, I think, is like if I ever get set parameters. Like I like working on like movie stuff. Like I did this Lego song with John Lajoie, and the parameters were so easy. It's like, we want a pop song with this vocal on there. And I was like, okay, cool. I'm going to make it sound, you know, like a, like an old Kesha record, and it worked. And it was like, it's really easy when it's like, okay, this is exactly what you have to do. But when it's not, here's what exactly you have to do, you have to know for yourself, like, all right, what exactly do I want to do?
Yeah.
And when I like doing everything, that's a bad thing.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, yeah. Does it feel like at this point in your career, like, is there still something you haven't done that you, in the back of your mind, you're like, that would be cool. I haven't done this yet. Or like, or even just, you know, something, maybe something you're doing now that's just like, this is fun the way shit used to be fun.
Yeah, no. I've been thinking about this a lot because I'm lucky enough to have played like the number one festival that I wanted to play. I think I've done it 3 or 4 times now, which is Coachella.
Right.
So I think the only stuff that's like really on my bucket list now is like, I really want to play that, whatever that festival is in Croatia.
What is it? I think I know which one you're talking about. Starts with an O.
Is it Exit Festival?
Oh, Exit. Yeah.
Cause I don't think I played that, and I'm Croatian.
Oh, are you?
Yeah. And Serbian.
Okay. Was there much of that? Were you aware of that as a kid? Was there like any of that culture growing up?
Only a little bit from my grandma, where she would make what's it called for Christmas? It was, why can't I think of the name of it? She would make palachinkis, which are like these, they're basically like crepes.
Okay.
Why can't I think of the name of the dish? But anyways, when I got older, there's a stuff called Schlivovitz, which is plum brandy, which every time you come over to their house, you take a shot of plum brandy together and you know,
that's say Shivali,
which is like, yeah. So there's that. But other than that, my mom didn't teach me Yugoslavian because she thought that Yugoslavia was going to destroy itself. Which also, I even yell at her and say, like, why wouldn't you have wanted me to know a dead language? Like, right. That's a job right there, to know a dead language. Yeah. Like, oh, yeah, I can translate.
Future archaeologist, yeah.
Yeah, come on, mom. Unbelievable.
Yeah, man, big misstep right there.
I know. I could have been the greatest Yugoslavian translator you've ever met. We could have had a way different conversation.
That's right. That's a whole different podcast.
But yeah, Jesus was a carrot. Right. According to Yugoslavians. Yeah.
And so. we're doing it all in a dead language.
Yeah.
I mean, was there, okay, this is a real question.
Oh, my internet.
Uh-oh.
Is it, whose is it?
I still got you. But was there ever a different path potentially for you? Was music always the thing?
So I wanted to be a photographer. I went to high school for it. I went to Los Angeles County High School for the Arts, and I wanted to basically be Ansel Adams. Like, I thought that I would, and it was right before the digital camera came around. So when I went to school there in 9th grade, I was able to get it. Like, I was able to go into the dark room, do my own, you know, what's it called? Do my own developing of all the stuff on film. And it was so fucking fun. And I was like, this is amazing. And then the next year they dismantled the whole room because digital is going to come around and basically blow, you know, film out of the water.
Yeah.
And it did. And I was working on a bunch of, like, I was working for this guy, Anthony Mandler, Chris Baldwin, Tierney Garon. Like, I was doing assistant work where I would set up lights and do kino fills. And cause they were doing stuff for like Vanity Fair and all these like shoots. And I thought that was a cool way to get in to make money.
Yeah.
But then my whole thing was I wanted to be a photographer on National Geographic and go and take like incredible photos of, you know, mountains or whatever it is.
Yeah.
And then I found out that National Geographic doesn't actually hire any of those people. They're just, you're submitting your photo and you get paid off of that.
Right.
And they don't actually hire anyone. So I was like, wait, this fucking sucks. Yeah. So when I graduated from LOXA and I got into San Francisco Art Institute, and I went up there and I showed them my portfolio. I was like, I want to do this. And also I went to that. This is the stupidest thing ever. I went to my audition, I guess, to get into the school. So hungover. Every time the lady asked me, like, why did you make this? I'd be like, oh, it was for class. Why did you make it? Oh, it was for class. I just couldn't even make up anything because I was so hungover.
Right.
And it was for class. That's why I had to do that. But like, I was making my own art for the...
Yeah.
I was not selling. But I got in and then I was like, oh my God, fucking 40 grand to go and become a photography major in an art form that's already changing to digital. And I don't know what I really want to do in there. So I was like, fuck that. I'm going to go to Santa Monica Community College. I'll just work with these people doing internships because I feel like I can learn more from that than I can from school. And I don't want to be in debt. And I'll just try to go through like all my general ed stuff and transfer to UCLA. And I dropped out after a year at SMC because I was like, school is just not for me. I'm so much more of a visual learner. Like, you show me how to do something, I can do it in two tries. So that's where I started doing that. And then I fell out of love with it because I was like, all these people suck. They were all so jaded and so mean. I guess I am that now too.
Jaded and mean.
I don't think I'm mean, but I think I'm very jaded.
Sure.
In terms of like what you were talking about, where it's like some person came up to me recently and was like, yo, like, how do you like going to Ibiza? And I'm like, fuck that place, straight up. And they're like, what? And I'm like, it fucking, so I'm like the worst person to ask about that stuff now. And I am the people that I hated.
Right. Sure. Yeah. Yeah. You're the one who is already over their dream.
Exactly. Exactly. Like, well, cause also my dream was never that big. My dream originally was just play Dimmock Studios,
dude,
and be friends with them.
Yes.
And that was it.
Yes.
I did not even imagine leaving Los Angeles. Like,
isn't that a crazy thing, man? Cause now, I mean, this is just inevitable with the rise of social media, but I think now a person starts getting into DJing and production with the expectation that they will be Skrillex, you know, like they will be an international rock star. Whereas it was the same for me. I mean, I was living on the East Coast and I saw a bunch of people I knew were living in Chicago and there was just a cool DJ scene there. Like this was, you know, Floss was doing local parties there.
Yep.
There were a few other people throwing cool, just Chicago events. There was no touring. There was none of that. And I was just like, I just moved my life to Chicago just because I was like, this looks awesome. I want to do that. And then I just hung out and we partied and we threw events and we all DJed together. And, you know, maybe we go play in like Columbus every once in a while or Cleveland, you know, and like that was it. And I was so happy, you know?
Yeah.
Like, it was the best.
Oh my God. When I played Dimmock Studios, I was the happiest I've ever been. Like, it was such an incredible accomplishment.
Yeah.
Cause man, coming from playing The Room and literally only one person showing up to your shows. So like, it was like, holy shit. I finally, like, I put it to my mind and I did it, you know, and I was able to make music that was good enough for them to be like, yeah, we'll book you. So
yeah,
it is crazy to think about that. There was just like, that was it. You know, I thought I was like, dude, I'm just going to become a DJ and be like on SBE. You know, and play that club circuit.
Right.
So.
And the thing is, though, even if that was where it ended for you and you did exactly that, probably would have been great, too. You know,
absolutely.
Like,
I definitely probably would have gotten out of music, I think, because I think something that I have a problem with is if something gets like very stale, I'll move on from it quickly. So like, I think if I had ended at that, I would have been like, all right, cool. Well, now I'm going to go and do what, like, you know, working at a creative agency or, you know, try to do, I don't know.
Well, I mean, you still do some of that, right? I mean, you still do, you've done TV projects. I know you've talked about like, you're writing a cartoon at the moment. Is that right?
Yeah, we were writing it with free, we had gotten it all the way to Freeform and then Freeform had a bunch of executives change over and then they ended up squashing the project and not wanting to do animation stuff.
I got you.
But We got a bunch of, like, I don't know if I can show them.
That's fine. We don't have to.
I don't know what the rules are. Yeah. So I'm so scared of, like, trying to, like, getting sued by whoever.
Yeah, of course.
You know, they're like, hey, you showed, but we got, like, art for it done. And it was really, really cool. I'm going to still try to bring it back out there. But yeah, that was, like, I guess the other thing that started happening while I was making music was that social media came to, like, such a big rise, and then becoming, like, a social media personality was definitely something that was, like, the music I started caring about less, and do it because the music became a job, and then the social media stuff was, like, super fun. And there also wasn't, like, content creators, right, or it was just, like, making fun videos online. And that was always such a fun thing.
You were so early with some of that stuff. I was thinking about it earlier today. Like, I was thinking about, you probably don't do this anymore, I haven't checked, but, you know, on your website, you used to sell ridiculous, like, things. Like, if somebody paid, what, $1,000, you'd build them a bed, or, yep, you know,
that. Did that one too.
Yeah, you did that one? That's amazing. But a lot of that, it reminded me, it was like kind of like what Cameo is now, where, yeah, you just pay somebody, you know, a certain amount, and they send you a video, or they do a thing for you, that kind of thing. But this was like years and years and years before Cameo, but it was kind, yeah, of that idea. And I feel like you've been just a little ahead on certain things like that. Even characters like Gerald or Hansel or any of that, I think now is somewhat standard. I see people, yeah, you know, like, make a funny alter ego to do videos with. But when you started doing it, at least to me, it didn't seem like there were a lot of people in our world even thinking about that.
I don't think so. Yeah, I don't know. It was just like, I was just doing stuff that I used to do in high school. Like, there was this class called New Genres, and we would always, like, you could do whatever you wanted in that class. And he was like, literally, like, anything's art, just do it.
Yeah.
And so my friend Will and I used to do these, like, stupid videos making fun of The Hills, which was, like, that show with all the people from, like, Laguna Beach, I think, or, right, maybe it was called Laguna Beach. So him and I would play every character on it, and we would, like, wear wigs. And then the whole joke that we kept having was, like, all the girls before going to whatever party it was, they would, like, eat a Hot Pocket, but they would eat it whole. And then they would, like, drink and throw it up. And then all the guys were, like, complete douchebags,
right,
just saying horrible things.
Yeah.
So when social media came around, and I was like, oh, I can do, like, all those stupid videos that I was doing, I just started, like, creating characters, just because it was, like, an outlet that nothing had been done. Like, there was no set of rules. And funny enough, now that I'm thinking about it, like, that was one of the things that I loved about Moombahtone for a long time, was that it was such a new genre that there was no set of rules whatsoever, that you could do whatever you wanted and no one would really say anything about it.
Yeah.
And same with, like, social media. You could really do whatever you wanted and no one would say anything about it. Now, like, if you make a video and you by accident put Pringles in it, someone's going to think it's an ad, yeah, you know? Or, yeah, if you say anything about some, you know, you have a Nike, like, you know, oh, I'm going to use my Nike running shoes and, you know, doing whatever. And they're gonna be like, oh, this is a fucking ad.
Yeah.
And that was never what was happening back then, because nobody knew that that's what it was going to turn into. So, yeah, now I hate social media.
Yeah, are you still on it? I mean, I'm sure you're not on it the way you used to be, but
I mean, I don't even look at Twitter anymore. I'll go on there if I hear that something bad is happening, and yeah, go to, like, look at live updates, which I think that's a really good thing.
No, that's valid.
Like, okay, cool.
Yep.
Like, it's more of a news aggregator, I guess, that I go to. But yeah, I don't really do anything on Twitter anymore. And then I'll do stuff on, like, TikTok and Instagram. I'll still use those a bit. But yeah, I feel like it's, like, gotten so stale as well for me on that stuff. This year, I'm definitely going to, like, take more time and figure out, like, exactly, like, what I want to do to, like, re-inspire myself for me. I mean, I'm already doing half of it for music.
Yeah.
And then figuring out what that other side is going to be for social media stuff or just what I want to do. Because it's like, I used to love making music videos so much, and now music videos is like not an art form anymore that people really go and look at, I guess, unless you're like Post Malone or Drake or something.
Yeah.
Like, I don't think like it's more so that you should do a TikTok to your song that's like 15 seconds rather than being like, I'm going to make a music video that's that people are going to want to go watch and then do that.
Yeah.
And, but I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know. These are the thoughts that I have.
Yeah. No,
just,
it's
I'm
true,
just
man.
Spraying
I,
them out there.
No. Yeah. It's bizarre. I mean, it's an odd, it's an odd time for everyone, man. And I think you're not the only one in that space right now. Like everybody I talk to, podcast or otherwise, musician or otherwise, I feel like I've talked about this a few times. Like there's this, I don't really get too into woo-woo stuff, but I do feel an energy from a lot of people I'm talking to of like the, especially new year 2023. This is maybe the first year where a lot of people feel like the world is really back, you know, mm-hmm. and everyone, I feel like everyone's got a little fire in their belly to like go out and do something to figure it out. Cause we spent so the last few years just, you know, you, maybe you wanted to do something and you couldn't, or maybe you were glad you didn't have to do anything and you kind of turtled up. I did a little bit of both, but now it's like, okay, we're back. There's less restrictions on what we can do. And it's been long enough that the stresses of whatever I was worried about a couple of years ago seem pretty distant. So it's like, all right, well, what's the worst thing that can happen? We might as well try something, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, I definitely think that's very true.
I mean, for you, I think, like,
especially yeah. in COVID, I feel like everyone did kind of take a moment to stop as well, because like the hamster wheel was the hamster wheel stopped for everybody, not just a couple people and then everyone else. And I'm saying that in terms of creative stuff. Like,
yeah.
I think the hamster wheel stopped for most anyone in the entertainment world. You know, for anyone that was touring or that was working on touring stuff, they couldn't tour. They had to figure out how to make money from, you know, either setting up live DJ sets that were on Twitch. But I think for a lot of people in music, it was a time where it was like, okay, I don't have to compete against anyone right now. And then I think that also affected the music that was put out during that time, because it was like, well, there was no competitive nature of it, you know, during that.
Yeah.
And also think people didn't really know, like all of us make music to play live. So it was like, all right, what do we make now? But yeah, I feel like with 2023 now, it's like finally there's somewhat of a tent pole in the ground of like, okay, this is what we're making right now. And we'll see what it changes into in the next year or so. But, you know, here's what we can be competitive against again.
Well, and I think too, like you were talking about the sets you and Diplo did, like the live streams and all of that. And so many, you know, I was doing live stream sets, everyone was doing them. And
yeah.
it was weird and it sucked in some ways, but then I think something cool came out of it where, like you were saying, it was like a lot of people realized that the audience's taste is a lot wider than maybe you thought it was before, and that people were open to a lot of different kinds of music, and you could DJ weird shit that you would never play in a club and people would be into yeah. it. And at least for me, that was really nice to see, in that like, oh, there's an whatever I want to do, there will be some audience for it. I could have
Absolutely.
The weirdest idea and someone in the world will probably like it, you know?
I'm like, yo, dude, I love this IDM.
Dude, straight up. Do you know the producer Ramon Pang?
No.
He's great. He's kind of trying to do this like somewhere in between EDM and IDM thing.
Oh, that's nice. Like, I loved IDM.
I did too, man. Yeah. Shout out.
Preview 73.
Oh my God. The best. The best.
I mean, I guess Apex Legends
twin
was the cult leader of IDM, I think.
Yeah.
I loved all that stuff. I mean, even was Postal Service considered IDM? Because it kind of like, it was very, like the drum patterns were
yeah,
certain.
Yeah, that's
like,
true.
Like sometimes
that's
they were
true. Indie IDM, I guess. Like
indie IDM. Yeah. I like that.
but anyway, I don't even remember why I was talking about all that. But what I wanted to ask you, you know, like going forward for you, is this kind of just a year of freeform inspiration? Are there things
yeah.
like what is your life like on a day-to-day basis right now? Like, what do you spend your time on?
Right now, I go to, so I do tutoring at Icon. Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday for 2 hours. And that's really just like getting me back into working on music. And then I've just been working on just singles and then other random music as well. And just trying to figure out exactly like what I do want to do for not this year, but the next year. Like, I think I'm going to take this year very slow and just kind of really think about what I want to cultivate for whatever audience I have, and try to create something really fun and interesting, and not have any expectations for myself, but then also to not put any like bars of what I want to make. And I want to see where that goes. Cause I've just been thinking about like when I started and I didn't care what I was making. And I think as dance music has gotten so popular in America and everywhere, and pop music started to become dance music, I think I've kind of blurred the lines between that. And I'm like wondering if I want to not go in the direction of more of pop music and make stuff that's like more of the old stuff that I used to make.
Yeah.
Not Mumatone, but like, you know, just really diving back. Like, that's why I wanted to go to Icon, was like to dive back into synthesis stuff, really learn the ins and outs of Serum and whatever synth that I'm using, Diva, and then just really like try to hone in on what I want to do and that what's going to make me creatively fulfilled. I think that that's what this year is really going to be for me. Cause like, as you were saying, like, I think a lot of people are feeling the same way of like, what is going to be that sauce that finally makes you excited and inspired again, to be working in Ableton. Cause I've talked to a couple other people that have felt the same way. And I don't want to name names because I don't want to air out their frustrations or
their
whatnot,
own midlife crises. Yeah.
But yeah, you know, I feel like a lot of people are going through that crisis of like, you know, identity, what it is you do, what it is you want people to be considered, that like what you want people to consider that you do as well. Like my friend Brandon Dermer, he was like, he asked me a question and it's like stuck with me forever. It's like, what do you want people to say when they hear like, oh, you know, this artist Dylan Francis, what do you want that response to be? And I would be able to answer that back then. Right now I have no fucking idea. So right. It's like, who am I?
Yeah.
As, you know, Dylan Francis as a project, I know who I am as a person, I think.
Well, that's hard too, right? I mean, you kind of, in a way, you sort of grew up as a person while you were becoming, you know, quasi famous as a DJ, right? Like at the same time, that's a weird thing.
Yeah. I'm happy that because I'm glad it's not something that happened when I was 18, you know. Luckily it was, I think, my trajectory, I feel like, was like a good, like Warren Buffett, you know, like I had a good 8 to 10% every year.
I usually, whenever I think about Warren Buffett, I think about you next.
Yeah. Good. Yeah. But no, I really do feel like I feel like I never had that crazy viral moment, which thank God, because that is such a tough thing to have to go through. I think people don't really understand how big of a burden that is on your psyche, just everything. It's just like, it's so hard to compete against that thing that everyone knows you for, that to do better than every single time.
And especially if it was unplanned, if it was an unplanned viral moment and you weren't ready for it.
Whew, exactly.
It's tough.
So I'm very happy that it's been that way, for myself being 23 and that happening. I felt like I was at least a little bit more grown up than if that would have happened to me if I was 18. I don't know if I would still be here today. You know?
Yeah. Yeah.
Sadly. Luckily that didn't happen, but I, you know, that's like always a scary thought. If like, you're not grown up enough to be able to handle the money or the fame or, you know, your insecurities that you're going to have.
Well, so
even
much
if you think
this,
you don't have them, you're going to find them out quick.
Oh yeah. If you think you don't have them, that's almost the worst position to be in. Because exactly. That just means they're going to fucking sneak up by. Yeah. It's so bad. But the other thing is, man, you just made me think of this too. So much of what we do is just pure timing and luck and shit that's out of our control. if anyone asks me shit, it's usually somebody who's like, you know, how do you get to from A to B? How did this person get to where, you know, the start to the end? What's the secret is basically the question. And it's such a bummer of an answer, but it's like, no, man, you have to work hard, obviously, but you have to be super lucky. The timing has to line up right. You have to make the right thing at the right moment, and you won't know if it's the right moment or not. We do so much of this in the dark, you know?
Yeah. I mean, I remember there was an interview where Deadmau5 was talking about that exact thing. And the main thing that he was saying was like, I just got lucky. I was lucky that I was on the Reddit. I don't even know what Reddit was back then, you know, whatever forums he was on, talking to people and making the music he made. It was like perfectly, he was perfectly in time without knowing that he was in time.
Yeah.
And I think that kind of happened for me where like, I was a kid that was like obsessed with technology and the internet. And I thought it was so cool. And Hype Machine was something that was really cool. That was like basically it's like the way of SoundCloud before SoundCloud was big, I guess.
Yeah.
And then SoundCloud happened, and SoundCloud was like the anti, you know, iTunes or whatever. So it was like, it was a very cool scene. And it also had like a really cool community that was in it. And that's how you could talk to other artists that lived in different places that you would never even be able to talk to. The puzzle pieces all like laid themselves out luckily in front of me. And, and then I was, you know, doing, I guess, whatever it is, like you have to be, there's not a statistic, but there's like, I feel like there's like one of those things where it's like, it's 20% your, how much you're actually like professional and doing what you're doing. And then the rest of that percentage, the 80%, is just like making sure that you have your ear to the ground and you know whatever's happening, or you're unconsciously a part of whatever is going to be in the zeitgeist.
And
I think I got lucky of like finding out about Moombahtone when I did, and really being like, fuck, this is so cool. I'm going to start making it because it's not dubstep. And I've been like making the same dubstep over and over, and nothing's hitting. So let's try this.
Yep. Yeah, that's what it is, man. And it's to give you the credit you deserve too. Obviously, you worked super hard on it. It was all you were doing at a certain point. and that has to be part of the equation too, right? It's like,
for sure.
Yeah.
Yes, I will say, and I was out there hustling like no other, I think, at that time, because I was so hungry just to like prove myself. Cause there was definitely a time where I told a lot of my friends that I was going to go into music, and I was always like the funny kid, and no one ever really like was like, yeah, dude, okay, you're going to go into music.
Yeah, yeah.
You don't even know how to play instruments, but the computer, they didn't understand that I understood computers anyways.
Yeah.
But yeah, there was like a part of it where it was like, I really want to show all these people that I am capable and that, you know, I can do this. And so that's where like this weird hustle came for myself, where I was like, I remember I was hitting up Kurt. Dude, Kurt can tell you, he was like, dude, Dylan was one of the most annoying people ever.
I think he would said hit me that up every, to me once. Yeah.
He said that
a long time ago. Yeah.
No, it's true. I was hitting him up like on AIM every time he signed on. I'd be like, yo, do you have stems for this? Or, hey, do you listen to this? Or,
yeah,
I was just going crazy. And then
I want to say too, I was also that person. I was like the biggest punisher. It's like, I think everybody goes through that phase.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then you'll be able to show, like, I remember people always would be like, dude, don't close that door. Don't punish people like that, because you'll close the door from them listening ever again. But also, don't ever listen to that if anyone's told you that, because I did it and they still listen later on. Like, there, once you get to an undeniable sound, then it washes that, you know, shitty taste of whatever shitty song you sent them, and then they'll pay attention. Because I remember I did that to so many people. Like, I remember I did it to Destructo, who books hard, and he was like, fuck no, these suck. And I did it to Kurt. And so many people.
I did it to Diplo. Yeah. I did it to Diplo real bad to the point where, yeah, well, he was like, you know, he liked what I was doing. And I worked on some major laser stuff for him back in the day. But even after that, I was still doing it. And at a certain point, yeah, he just sent me an email that was like, bro, you got to chill out. Like, you got to stop. and he wasn't mean about it. And in a way, it was like the best advice I've ever gotten. But yeah, it was to the point that's where so he like funny. Took time out of his day to be like, stop.
Like, yeah.
Stop oh doing this. Oh my God. Yeah.
That's amazing.
Well, it's cool. You're mentoring, man. That's got to be just keep you connected to all this shit we're talking about too. Like coming up and the hunger and the young excitement.
Wait, am I mentoring anybody?
Oh, isn't that what you said? You were doing tutoring at Icon?
No, I'm getting tutored at Icon.
Oh, I missed that. I thought you were going back and kind of doing like a hybrid, like teaching, learning thing. Okay.
No. I'm going back and like literally.
Oh, that's
like,
even better.
I'll go into the mixing and mastering session with this guy and be like, pretend I don't know anything. Like I want to learn from the beginning and just know that I've done these things correctly.
Nice.
And then I'll go into like the synthesis one and be like, all right, how is this made? How is that made? Just to like refresh my brain and be like, okay, I do remember how to do all this stuff.
Yeah. No, and that makes more sense than what was in my head. I thought you were doing some weird hybrid thing, but yeah.
But no. I mean, I do like, I think sometime in February, I'm going to do like one of the Q&A things. And I do want to meet all those kids because, you know, those are going to be the next people that form whatever dance music is that's going to take place. So I do want to meet all them. And
it was me, Kurt, Getter, and Arye. We went and we did a live podcast.
Dude,
I love Arye, man. We did a live podcast at Icon. This was pre-pandemic, but dude, it was like, yeah, just us in front of like 40, 50 kids having the same conversation you and I are having right now and taking their questions and meeting them. It was like, Kurt and I still talk about it to this day. It was one of the most meaningful things I've done in a long time. You should totally
do it.
Oh,
that's awesome.
You would love it. You would love it.
Oh, no, I'm excited to do it. I can't wait. And yeah, like just meeting some of those kids and like, I want to see if I can hear some of their music too and like give, you know, constructive crit and then even just keep in touch. Like, I'm just going to keep in touch with Icon and Chris, who I think runs and owns it. Forever, just because it's been so, even just I think I'm on like my fourth week of tutoring and it really has started to make me be like, okay, cool, I'm gonna start, like, I know I'm gonna start having fun again. I want to finish all the stuff and then I want to go in with like super fresh mind and just start using all the tricks that I've been learning.
Yeah.
And really go in and make music,
man. I love it, man. Well, dude, it's really fun to catch up with you, man. I feel like we could talk for hours, but I don't want to take up your whole day.
We definitely could.
Yeah, I think so, man. Well, and hopefully we will. I'd love to see you outside of this too sometime. Grab some dinner.
Yes.
Be great, man.
Are you still in Chicago?
No, I was in San Diego for a long time and now I'm in Washington, D.C.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
I think I'm going to be there sometime soon. I'll text you and let you know.
Dude, that would be great. Is there anything else? I mean, we talked about the Hansel album for some reason, even though you don't know that guy.
Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah. Is there anything else on your mind? Anything I didn't ask you? Anything else you want to get out there before we go?
No. It was a really good, refreshing conversation. And it's cool to hear from you that people are going through the same thing that I'm going through in my brain. And I feel like it's a lot more people than I thought. Like,
yes.
I even had a conversation with some other person yesterday where I was like, this is crazy to hear this from you, who I thought was not going through that problem. So I feel like everyone's doing this like little, you know, who am I? You know, they're the Derek Zoolander in the water. Who am I? I don't know.
Yeah. Dude, I mean, that's to me, that's kind of when everything else fails, that's what keeps all this fun to me, is to remind myself that no one has any idea what they're doing at any level. No one has any idea.
I have no idea.
Yeah.
I really don't.
It's great. It's great.
I mean, well, I've even going back to those tutoring sessions, the funniest thing too is like, the main thing is, if it sounds good, that's it.
Yep.
That's it. That's really all it comes down to. If it sounds really good and it's not like a shitty version of a song. I mean, also a shitty version might work just if it has that it factor. But it was cool to like remember that again. Like,
yeah,
it doesn't need to be perfect. If it's good and it's good, then fucking go for it.
Dude, 100%. Yeah, that's the last thing I'll say. Have you seen those like viral videos of the Baile Funk shit that's going around right now? There's just this one clip of this kind of the production. The reason it's getting sent around is because the production is like almost unlistenable. It's it's just the wildest shit. But then Jake went on this whole rant on Twitter the other day about it. He was like, this is the coolest thing I've heard. It's like rewiring my brain because it's very interesting. But it the first time you hear it, it breaks your brain. It's just like what it sounds like three different songs are playing.
I'm reading Jake's tweets. And as soon as dubstep producers figure out how to break the fourth wall of sound design, it's over.
Jake is another reason why I can never leave Twitter also.
I love him to death. We talked for 2 hours a couple days ago. We like got back. Well, I mean, we'd always somewhat like talk to each other. We tried to do a Dilda Noise re-edit and we never came to fruition. But we started talking again because I was over in Burbank and one of the guys that I work with for the synth stuff is Mike Gigantor.
Oh, yeah.
So we started talking about Jake and I was like, fuck, I got to call Jake. And I talked to him for like 2 hours. In the middle of the 2 hours, I get home to my place and my fucking girlfriend's dog had shit on the carpet, but stepped in it and literally tracked it all around the house. Do you remember that Dumb and Dumber-er, like the horrible version of that where it's like Bob Saget being like, there's shit everywhere. Yeah. I was basically Bob Saget yelling, there's shit everywhere. And I was like, Jake, I got to call you back.
That's perfect. That's good though. Cause you need with him, you need something to end the conversation or it will not end.
It's true. Nothing against you, Jake. I love you.
No. Oh, he's the best. He is one of my favorite people to talk to in any context. But every conversation with him is a podcast. Every time you talk to him, it's a podcast.
So funny.
All right, man. Well, let me let you get out of here, dude. It's great to catch up with you, man. It's great to see your face.
Dude. And,
yeah, it's been a while.
Fantastic. Well, dude, it's incredible talking. That was such a blast.
Dude, so much fun.
I miss you. I love you.
I miss you too, baby. I miss you too.
I can't wait to see you in DC for real.
Yeah, dude, let's do it. Let's absolutely do it. Thank you for doing this, man. I know there's going to be a lot of people excited to see you on here too. And that's it, man. Let's hang out soon.
And see how depressed I am.
Yeah, a lot of people have been waiting to find out how depressed you are.
Can he be depressed?
Yeah. Well, that's Sad Machine's got to be the next. That's the next one.
Yeah. But didn't Porter Robinson make that already? Isn't that one of his songs?
Yeah, I mean, he did, but don't let that stop you. You know,
You're right.
What if you just remixed the Porter Robinson album, Sad Machine?
That's what I'll do.
It's like Dumb and Dumber. You got to do Sadder Machine.
Sadder. Yeah, with the in parentheses.
All right, man. I love you. I'll talk to you soon.
Love you
Have
too.
A great rest of your
talk
day.
Talk soon.
Peace, man.
Later.
Bye.